Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
On air, Poneke. Kia ora everyone and welcome to the Wellington AA On Air meeting for Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Vic. I am an alcoholic and chairperson for today's meeting. We open AA meetings with the Serenity Prayer, and I invite you to join me. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. This meeting opens with the AA preamble, which goes as such. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So it's a beautiful sunny day in Wellington, and we don't actually have a group assigned to the show this month. So what I've done instead is ask some people who came into recovery young to share their experience, strength, and hope with us. So what they'll do is, we've got no readings, we're just going to jump into the sharing, and they'll share what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. So I'll start off by asking Daniel to please share.
Thanks, Vic. Hi, I'm Daniel, and I'm an alcoholic.
Good day, Daniel.
Hi, Daniel.
So, yeah, I started drinking at 18. I went to this party. I don't normally go to parties. I had always thought before then that partying and drinking were for just not my thing. Were for losers, honestly. I couldn't understand why people would drink. And then I had my first beer, and it was like the two hemispheres of my brain connected, and I couldn't believe how amazing the feeling was. And my second beer, I stole my friend's drink, and then by the end of the night, I was in a bikini sculling ouzo, running around the streets and just having the most amazing time I'd ever had in my life. And I just couldn't believe this feeling. And so my drinking ramped up really, really quickly. 2 days after that party, I got into my mother's liquor cabinet, got two bottles of port, drank them all, threw up, and it was just on from there. From there, it was really just trying to drink as much as I could, romanticizing it, and then just trying to keep my life together at the same time. So went to university, drank through there. Things got worse and worse, but you know, I was young, so it was still okay. I could still sort of physically recover at that point. You know, by the age of about 20, my family, 21, my family had realized, you know, Daniel, he can't drink. he just can't. And I was drinking beers on the way to university in the morning after a particularly bad, bad drinking session the night before. And I somehow managed to scrape through university, go on to postgraduate study. And to do that, I stopped drinking for about a year. And I say stopped, and I mean sort of. It was horrible, you know. I mean, I had a few cheat days every now and then, but you know, to get through my studies, I did have to stop. But the thing about it though is that as soon as any pressure came back into my life, or anything bad happened, you know, troubles with my girlfriend or issues with not feeling like, I don't know, people understood me or feeling lonely, I could just go straight back to this magical elixir, which just it just worked too well for me. And it's interesting, I talk to other people about it and sort of ask them, well, what's the feeling you get when you have a drink? And they say, oh, I get kind of tired. And I think, really? Because I can just... It just works every time for me. It was just this incredible thing, and I romanticized it, and I wrote poetry about it, and yeah. And so fast forward a little bit, and I've been trying to stop and moderate for a really, really long time, and I've graduated from wine to spirits most of the time. I'm working. And I just, every time I take a drink, I just don't know what's going to happen. And that's a pretty common, I think that's a pretty common story among us. So, yeah, I'm in my mid-20s and I'm getting really, really overweight and sick. And I'll take a drink. I always say, oh, it's just a bottle of wine. And then I wake up in the morning and I've had a bottle of vodka, and I'm sweating and I've done some stupid thing and I've texted the wrong person, and I have to get up and go and do what I need to do for the day, and I'm just sick. I'm just sick to my stomach, both physically and mentally, and just trying to think back, just trying to go through the day and manage life like that is horrible. So eventually it got to the point where it was absolutely just too much, and I really, really, really needed help, and it was just getting more and more severe and worse, and I was getting more and more dependent on it, and you say it always gets worse, never better. It's a progressive disease. And so I did manage to find AA and came into the rooms here in Wellington and slogged it out for about 7 or 8 months, trying my absolute best to get sober, and sort of getting up, you know, 2 or 3 days at a time for about 7, 8 months. And that's a really horrible place to be, but the incredible thing is that once I sort of found my place, and I went to this meeting and I started making connections and friends and things, and somebody at a meeting said, to every meeting, say, you know it's going to kill you, right? I sort of nodded and went, yeah, I know. He said, well, you know, just keep coming back, and if, you know, if you do get drunk, just come in and we'll put you under the table. And I don't know what it was about that comment, but there's just such kindness in it, and I just didn't have to feel shame about having messed up once again. And I don't know, it was just such a liberating thing for me, and it wasn't that long after that I finally managed to get up enough days and the desire to drink really truly was lifted from me, and it took a while, but it really happened, and that coincided with doing the steps and having a really, really strong foundation in step one. And from there, you know, the path hasn't always been easy, but it's just been so much better. Yeah, so I think I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Thanks, Daniel.
Thanks, Daniel. And now I'll ask Lisa to share, please.
Thanks, Vic. Kia ora, I'm Lisa. I'm an alcoholic. Thanks for your share so far. I related to a lot, and my experience, strength and hope. I started drinking as a young teenager, and alcohol always seemed to me to be this glamorous and fun and exciting part of life, and I was a shy and lonely child, and I desperately wanted to be a part of that excitement and camaraderie and friendship and all the things that went along with drinking. And as soon as I had sort of gone to my first party and experienced that sort of feeling of being a part of the world and not separate from it, I was completely hooked. But alcohol was a problem for me from the very first time I drank. And it was the pattern that continued throughout the 17 years that I continued to drink. I would always, always drink too much, drink more than I intended, and end up far worse off than I had planned to be at the start of the night. So the start of the night planned to be a few drinks with friends, and the end of the night was, vomiting, passed out, didn't know where I was, and basically a liability to myself and to anyone who was around me. And then the feelings of shame and guilt the next day were just horrific. And immediately as well, the mental obsession began that one day I would find a way to control and enjoy my drinking, and that I just needed to try a bit harder, do something a bit different, not drink that particular spirit, not go there, not hang out with these people, like drink water. Like, there's a whole long list that everyone who's an alcoholic will understand, that these are the things we try to be able to control our drinking. When I didn't realize at the time that I was an alcoholic, and what that means I know now is that I can't control my drinking. Once I start drinking, I have a physical allergy to continue to drink more and more and more and more until I physically can't drink anymore. So that was how things started, and that's how things continued for me. And I think early on I really related to feeling like that idea of like, oh, well, you just can't drink, because I think I realized that quite early on, that every time I drank, the same thing kind of happened. And that I didn't have control, and I realized, well, maybe this is actually something I'm not going to be able to do. So quite early on in my drinking years, I stopped and immediately replaced it with other things. And so that was an ongoing cycle that went on in my life as well, that I'd put one substance down and I'd pick up something else. And then eventually I would always go back to alcohol. And my life started revolving more and more around alcohol in terms of, where I worked and who I hung out with and what I did, and all other interests that I had seemed to sort of slip away. And the only thing that became important to me was, just continuing to be able to, drink and do what I wanted to do. And so any sort of goals or dreams I had just kind of all fell away, because I was too busy trying to manage or recover from my alcoholism. I just didn't know that at the time. And as time went on, I just became more and more upset and disappointed in myself, and used more alcohol to manage that sort of pain and shame. And so it was always something that was, it was always a problem. It was just always a problem in my life. Like I said, I had sort of tried to quit before, or have times, and I could stop drinking for periods of time, sometimes quite long periods of time. I could stop drinking and not have a drink at all. But when I drank again, the same thing happened. I would always just drink far too much and, end up feeling completely bewildered about what had happened, and having to sort of try and rebuild my life from the ground up. And it just was an ongoing cycle. And I could never shake it. I could never get rid of that feeling that one day I'd find a way to control it. What happened was nothing changed. I went to a meeting of AA quite early on and realised that, I thought I was just too young and had more time to try and figure it out. So I went out again for about 10 years and when I came back, I had the what we call the gift of desperation, where I was just ready to do whatever it took to change my life, to stop drinking entirely. And I knew that was the only solution. I knew, like, I couldn't drink. Drinking doesn't work for me. When I drink, I know what happens. And I also reached the point where I knew that, but I was still unable to stop. And that was a really demoralizing and disheartening place to be in my life. So I came into the rooms willing to sort of do whatever it took, but that doesn't mean I, you know, it was all easy or straightforward from then. All I really wanted to do was stop drinking. And so for a long time, I wasn't prepared to listen or accept or try and do any of the other things that are recommended in the 12-step program. However, over time, that has changed, and the only thing I really had to do was to, in the beginning, was to just keep turning up to meetings, keep going to a meeting, keep hearing the message that other people in the rooms were sharing, their experience, strength and hope about what had happened to them. And I related to that so much, to everything I heard in the rooms, and the meetings changed the way I was thinking about myself. It changed the way I was thinking about my alcoholism. I realized that it wasn't, the problem wasn't that I was just a, you know, just a mess who couldn't figure out a way to drink like normal people and enjoy everything that alcohol seemed to offer. This is a disease, I guess, the disease of alcoholism that millions of people around the world have, and I'm one of them. And that physical allergy of always wanting to drink more, you know, one drink is too many and 1,000 is not enough. You know, I really understand what that means, because that's what happened to me when I drank. So continuing to come to meetings, that's one thing I've done. I have listened to other people in the rooms. I have tried to share my experience, strength and hope. Eventually I got into the big book and the steps, and so it's been really slow progress, but it's been progress, and I've been in the rooms a while now, and my life has changed completely from where it was when I came in. And there's many, many external things that have changed, and it's interesting. It's the small things that mean the most to me now, and the fact that now I'm able to do things, just regular stuff in my daily life, and participate in daily life. I can turn up for work on time, organized, not hungover, not drunk, not thinking about not thinking about the next drink. I can turn up for my friends and family. Whereas before, if I said I was going to be somewhere, it wasn't, no one could be sure if I would be there. I can keep in contact with my friends and family now and not go AWOL for days or weeks at a time where no one knows where I am or what I'm up to. I can trust myself in social situations now, where I never used to be able to do that. I used to go to a barbecue and wake up, you know, the next day not knowing what on earth I'd done. And now I can go to a barbecue, enjoy it for a couple of hours and drive home and wake up in the morning and know what I've said, know what I've done, and I can continue on with my day. I can do things now that I enjoy, like going for a walk or a bike ride, not have to stop and vomit over the side of the track. That's happened more than once. You know, I can just participate in my life, and it's really, that's the biggest gift, because when I was drinking, I couldn't participate in my life. I like physically wasn't able to. Drinking just took over everything, and it took over my spirit. You know, so I was so busy feeling so awful about everything that I wasn't able to enjoy my life at all. And that's not how it is today. You know, so the feeling that I can trust myself now, to do what's right for me, and I can also help others when possible. And the simple things like that bring me a lot of joy. And when I can look back on the day and know that I've done the best I can that day, that's what matters to me now. So it's a completely different life to the one that I had before. And I still feel that it's only really just starting as well. Like, there's so much more to come. And one of the things people say in the program is the best is yet to come. And I know that if I stay sober one day at a time, that great things will happen and do happen. And that's been my experience. And, you know, I'm grateful for the life that I have today. So I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa. Thanks, Lisa. Just a reminder, this is the AA On Air program, and you're listening to Wellington Access Radio on 106.1 FM. If you or someone you know relates to what you hear today and would like to get in contact with AA in New Zealand, you can call us on 0800 AA Works. That's 0800 229 675. In my opinion, the best place to go for everything AA is the Alcoholics Anonymous website, www.alcoholicsanonymous.org.nz. You can find the 0800 number there if that was a bit quick for you. You can find meetings in every, you know, city in New Zealand if you go to the meetings list. And you can also find this recording and other recordings of this show as a podcast. So if you enjoy what you've heard today and you'd like to hear some more, you can go to the AA website. If it's not up to date, I would go to the Wellington Access Radio website, as they have up-to-date recordings of this show. Okay, so we'll get back into the rest of the sharing, and I will ask Daisy to share.
Hi, my name's Daisy and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Daisy.
Yeah, grateful to be here. I started drinking properly when I was 15. So before that, I sort of was given alcohol by my parents, even younger than that, and by my grandparents when I was just a little girl, but it never really resonated with me at the time. I didn't really get into properly drinking until I was about 15. And it seemed pretty benign at first. I mean, the first time I drank, I ended up stealing a whole bottle of my dad's rum and vomiting all over my floor in my room and getting put in the shower in my clothes. So I guess that wasn't the best start. However, just the way it made me feel was just so incredible that I persevered. And I drank every time I got the chance, essentially. You know, my friends liked alcohol, but they didn't like alcohol as much as I liked alcohol. But, like, through high school, I mostly drank moderately. I definitely had some pretty shocking times of excess, passing out at the school ball and all sorts of horrible things. But you can kind of get away with it when you're a teenager. And I was just obsessed with the allure of alcohol. My parents always told me that it was what adults do. They grow up and they drink alcohol. And I couldn't wait to be an adult so I could drink alcohol unchecked. I was just obsessed. I did my English project at school on alcohol advertising. and I failed. I don't think they liked the topic very much, unfortunately. But I was just so obsessed with the allure of these vodka bottles, and they're so beautiful to me. You know, there are plenty of other beautiful things out there, but these vodka bottles were just so beautiful. And I plastered them all over my room after I'd finished my English assignment. I put up posters, and then just to mediate it a little bit, I put up a few anti-alcohol campaigns to remind myself that there are a few pretty bad situations I'd gotten myself into. I was a pretty anxious kid and a very awkward teenager. I always wanted to be friends with the cool kids, and it felt like drinking and stealing and smoking and all those good things that teenagers get into were like a means to an end to achieve that. My parents were very liberal, probably a little too liberal really, and they would just encourage me to bring my friends around to drink alcohol at my parents' house. So everybody thought I was super cool because my parents let me drink. And I think they were just trying to sort of introduce us to adult substances in a safe environment, but it seems to have had the opposite effect on us. Yeah, I'm not the only one of my siblings who's now having a few issues with the alcohol, to put it lightly. I was always a party girl, a binge drinker. I didn't quite ever get into daily drinking. I sort of hit my rock bottom before I got there, but I have no doubt that if I had continued to drink the way I was drinking, I would have absolutely gotten there in the end. I would just, as it was, my parents put a lot of emphasis on career, so I did the university thing and I got a job, and I'd spend the whole week at work just waiting to drink. I'd spend a few hours drinking happily, and then I'd always pretty much always black out, wake up at home generally. I would seem to have a little bit of a homing device back then. I could just like pass out anywhere and somehow I'd make it home, probably thanks to the grace of my amazing friends at the time. But I, you know, would spend the rest of the weekend wondering if I'd lost my job, if I'd like hit on my boss or my workmates, or being brought home by the police. I'd fallen asleep in taxis, put myself into some hideous situations, crawled over balconies in a total blackout, 7 stories up, no idea what I was doing, don't remember it. My sister told me in the morning and I was pretty horrified, but continue to drink, of course. I guess my drinking ramped up in my early 20s. All I wanted to do was party. Nothing was secondary to it. I went to University of Otago specifically because it was a party school. It was the only party school in the country at the time. And all I wanted to do was party, and it was just the most exciting thing in the world, like the chaos and the drinking, and my drinking really got quite bad while I was down in Dunedin at university. Yeah, nothing was secondary to it. So I failed lots of papers at university. I failed chemistry 3 times because I was too busy drinking to study. I blacked out a lot. I was assaulted. There's a really big culture of assault in Dunedin, sexual assault, unfortunately. And I was assaulted multiple times, and probably the worst experience, I hit my head so hard that I, drinking vodka and falling down the stairs, that I suffered a moderate brain injury with quite a few lesions on my brain and post-concussive syndrome that lasted for months and months and months. But I didn't stop drinking. Even throughout the concussive syndrome, I just continued and continued and continued, probably prolonged it a hell of a lot. And it was, yeah, it was absolutely terrible. When I moved back, I moved over to Australia after university. My drinking just got worse and worse and worse. One of the universities over there enrolled me in an alcohol study because they thought I was so bad that I could be the test subject of their research paper. They found me wandering the streets of Fortitude Valley at 3 o'clock in the morning, blackout drunk, no idea what was going on. breathalyzed me. And I only found out about this in the morning when they gave me a call and told me about it. Had no idea. Somehow agreed to being enrolled in this thing, which lasted a couple of years, actually. And also got paid for it. You know, small mercies, I suppose. But yeah, every time they'd call me, they'd say, so have you taken steps to reduce your drinking? And I would always tell them the truth because I didn't know them. But the answer was never yes. And they'd always give me suggestions and I'd say, okay, cool, I'll try that. And of course I never did. In the end in Brisbane, I lost my job because of drinking. I worked at a university union and I actually made a pass at one of the students when I was drunk. And as a result, my HR manager unceremoniously fired me for sexual harassment, which is really cringy and really awful thing to be like sort of accused of. I don't remember it at all. I was absolutely blackout wasted. But yeah, awful stuff. And I moved back to Wellington because I was just drinking and passing out and drinking and drinking in bed and passing out because I didn't have a job anymore. I had nothing like to do and my granddad had given me a massive inheritance. So I was just drinking my way through all of that. But yeah, my flatmate over there put me on an aeroplane. I was completely wasted and I ended up back in New Zealand. And my drinking just got worse and worse and worse. And at this point, surprisingly, I had never thought, oh, well, maybe I should take a look at my drinking. It never occurred to me. I just wanted more and more. And I met a guy and his friends who weren't only into alcohol, but loads and loads of drugs as well. And I just sort of like put myself in that scenario and I hid my insanity by disguising myself with all these other people. And then that in the end resulted in me becoming a drug addict as well as an alcoholic. I still to this day struggle to moderate anything that has the effect of dopamine on my brain. But yeah, even after a few years of that, even my ex didn't want to drink with me anymore because I was such a liability and I'd get us into so much trouble, getting sort of kicked out of airports and not let on aeroplanes and all sorts of different stuff. And then I started trying to stop in 2018 under duress because he told me that he was going to leave me if I didn't. And I tried absolutely everything to stop myself drinking too much and getting blackout drunk. Low alcohol beers, only drinking when I was taking drugs, all that sort of thing. And finally in 2020, my really close friend introduced me to AA. I absolutely hated it at first. I picked it apart. My brain was incredibly resistant to it. And I just cried all through the Friday night meetings because all I wanted to do was be at the pub. But for the first 4 years that I was in AA, I was still using drugs, which eventually led me back to drinking. And my ex-partner finally left me after a particularly spectacular relapse. And then I sort of was like, well, now I can drink unchecked. This is great. And then in the space of a month, I was hospitalized. I had a massive overdose. I got arrested on an airplane for vaping and being wasted. I did my little side hustle drunk and I attacked my mother when she tried to take the alcohol off me. So in the end, I realised that it was me who needed to stop rather than all the people who'd been telling me for years and years. And I finally hit the sort of gift of desperation side of things. And I came back into AA, finally entrenching my life in it. I'm 96 days sober today from all alcohol and drugs, and I'm finally doing the steps, going to 5 meetings a week, and now that I'm actually ready to listen and learn, I learn new things about my sobriety every day, and yeah, I really love the fellowship, and it's quite literally saved my life, I believe. Yeah, thanks.
Thanks, Daisy.
And finally, I'll ask Ryan to please close the meeting.
Ryan, alcoholic.
Hi, Ryan.
Thanks for inviting me to be on this, and I've identified with all the shares so far. My father was a pretty serious alcoholic, so I was around problematic drinking from a very young age. And one of my earliest memories of drinking, I was drinking with my brother, and we were drinking vodka and orange juice, and he vomited that night. And since then, as far as I know, he hasn't drinking orange juice or vodka. And I think that's a pretty normal reaction to that. My reaction, because I vomited the same night, was my first thought was, I hope I digested that before I vomited it. And my second thought was, I can't wait to do that again. And that was pretty much my drinking through most of my drinking career. For a long time, I was mostly a binge drinker. I drank, weekly, fortnightly, but I drank a lot. And I didn't know I'd black out until I would eventually hear people tell me conversations we've had, and I'm like, I don't remember any of that. But I would drink to black out, I would vomit, I would pass out eventually. But, then I'd stop for a week or two and then I'd just do it again. And it didn't seem problematic. My father's drinking was a yardstick for me for the longest time, and my drinking always paled in comparison to that until it didn't. And the first time I tried to quit drinking was in 2019. I crashed a car after getting wasted and not sleeping for ten days, something like that. I don't even remember. And just drinking at the end of that and just crashing a car. And that was the first time my drinking hurt someone else, because my partner at the time was in the car with me. I ended up splitting my head open and getting 7 staples in my head, and then also cracking 2 of her ribs and re-injuring a old injury she had on her spine. And so after that, I stopped drinking for 13 months. And this was all in Australia. Halfway through that period of sobriety, I moved to the United States, where my partner of the time was from, and continued not drinking there for another 6 months. Until I thought, I'm in a better place now. Because I didn't think I was an alcoholic, I just thought I was drinking at the wrong time. So I picked up again, and I immediately went from being a weekly, fortnightly drinker to just daily drinking. Drinking very strong beers over there. They have 13, 14% IPAs over there, and I just get wasted on those almost daily, with very small periods of sobriety in between. And I got into a lot of trouble in the United States. I've had guns pulled on me. I crashed more cars. Unfortunately, I did end up hurting other people from my drinking again and again. And sort of at some point, I got arrested, things like that, got maced. At some point, we went back to a small town, my favorite small town in America, where I used to live for just to visit and to help some people out that we helped out before through landscaping. And I decided at that point that I would stop drinking for 2 weeks. I had this plan. I would stop drinking for 2 weeks and then I would drown myself in the lake there, because that's how sure I was at that point. I just couldn't stop drinking for more than 2 weeks. So I wanted to, make that time at that small town just wonderful for me and my partner at the time, and then just end it. I only made it 12 days, I didn't make it the whole 2 weeks, and I started drinking again. More chaos ensued all over the United States, which I had to end up fleeing and coming to New Zealand. When I got to New Zealand, I thought I could just, stop drinking, make things better. That didn't happen. My time in New Zealand was just as chaotic as my time in the States. More times being arrested, more hospitalizations, kicked out of at least a dozen flats over North Island. And then eventually my wife had enough and she left me and went back to the United States. And that was 2 days before I came to AA. When she initially left, I was like, okay, that's good. I'm not going to have anyone around me I can hurt. I can just drink with impunity. I did that for 2 days, ran out of alcohol, realized how miserable it was, and somehow ended up in AA. I don't know why I decided to go to AA, but I did go that night. I went to the Saturday night meeting. I've tried various ways to quit drinking before AA. I've tried therapy. I've tried doctors. Therapy never worked. I just lied to my therapist. I would do the, you know, exercises they had for me and stuff, but, you know, I never took it seriously. Didn't seem to work for me. I would tell my therapist that I wasn't drinking. When I was prescribed drugs for my drinking, they would tell me things like, so one time it was antipsychotics and the doctor said, oh, you got to be careful drinking on this because every beer you drink will feel like two or three beers. And my first thought was, great, I'm going to save so much money on this drug. but I did end up in AA, and that first night there was the first time I really identified with anybody. There's someone in this room actually that I identified most. I had a long talk with them after the meeting, and I just, you know, I thought this was pretty cool. I'll come back. That first night I was invited out to dinner, which was the first time in a long time that anyone wanted me to come out to dinner with them. People gave me their numbers, and it was one of those numbers I called the following day to come pick me up at the place I was staying at, that I just started staying at, to take me to a Sunday night meeting. And he came to pick me up, texted me that he was outside. I finished getting ready, and just as I was about to leave, I heard a knock on the door, and I thought, oh, that's nice of them. They didn't have to come all the way up to my door to get me. I opened the door, and this cop standing outside. I'm like, damn. They told me I was under arrest for a breach of bail because a couple nights before that I was squatting at a house that I wasn't supposed to be at, because just before I got into that flat I was sleeping in my car. And so I was like, okay, just let me text my friend and let him know I'm not going to AA tonight. And so I texted my mate and said, yeah, I'm being arrested, can't come to AA. He just texts back, okay, cool, see you later. They didn't oppose my bail, luckily enough, and I got out the following day. I texted that same friend and he picked me up and took me to the Monday night meeting. I remember being quite embarrassed. I got arrested on my second day in AA, and I remember expressing that to him, and he just said, oh, no, don't worry about it. It's just a classic newcomer story. So that put me at ease, and that was great. I didn't feel judged at all, and still haven't to this day in AA. At that Monday night meeting, I met my sponsor. I didn't know he was my sponsor at the time. I didn't know he was my sponsor for probably for a month after that. He just kept telling me to go to places and do things. I just kept listening. And it was probably 3 weeks after that, I was coming up for sentencing. And I remember calling him a couple of days before sentencing, calling my sponsor, and just telling him how, like, freaked out I am and how I think I'm going to jail. And he's like, everything's going to be okay. I'm like, what do you mean it's going to be okay, Tim? I'm going to jail. And he just says, oh, there's AA in jail. It's all good. Yeah, and so even now when I complain about work and such, he just sends me stoicism quotes from Marcus Aurelius. But it's good because I found somebody in my sponsor that cares more about my life than my feelings. He presses on me all the time how AA is not a program of feelings and thoughts, it's a program of actions. And if I make the right actions, everything will turn out to be all right. And that's the way it's been so far. And he also presses on me that AA is not a program where we put ourselves first, but it's where we put our fellows first. And he uses an analogy of flying on a jet plane and it's having issues and the oxygen masks come down and you're told to put your own oxygen mask on before you put your friend's mask on. And he says, in AA, you put your friend's mask on first and you let God put your mask on. And so it's been 5 months in AA for me, just over. I've been through the steps. And since I've been in AA, I haven't had to cheat or steal. I haven't been arrested. I haven't been hospitalized. I haven't had to drink. And most importantly, I've actually been able to help other people, because towards the end of my drinking, I was doing the opposite all the time. I was just causing wreckage in the lives of everyone that I came into contact with. And so to actually be able to help people and to be in a place I can do that.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard. Thanks New Zealand On Air for funding accessmedia.nz.